This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Don't miss your window of opportunity. Upgrade your space now during Blinds.com's anniversary sale and save up to 50% site-wide. Blinds.com. Elevate your windows with the number one online retailer of custom window treatments. Blinds.com offers hundreds of premium window treatment options. Choose from woven wood and Roman shades to blinds, motorized shades, and more. All designed to fit your budget without sacrificing quality. Blinds.com brings the showroom to you with free virtual consultations and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Our design experts can help schedule a professional measure and installation, plus guidance for DIYers too. Blinds.com has been trusted for 29 years, earning thousands of five-star reviews. Shop with confidence, knowing you'll get upfront pricing, no hidden fees, and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. But hurry, these savings won't last. Shop Blinds.com's anniversary sale happening right now for up to 50% off site-wide. Save up to 50% site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Two more. Go ahead.
Jeff, we get our friend Dennis in Whitehaven.
Hey, Dennis.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. As I'm traveling on the road back from Birmingham from the Memphis takeoff.
How was that? How was it down there?
Man, it was great, Jeff. And two things, not to get off topic, but two things. That's a perfect size for a campus stadium. Man, that we could have that 9,000, 8,500 people. You would not be able to get a ticket to the Memphis Tigers game if we had it like that. But it was great. I would say percentage-wise, 30-40% Tigers, man.
Wow.
It was outstanding. It was outstanding. Oh.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm glad you were there, and I'm glad you're coming back with a win. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it. All right, last call, Jeffrey. Who do we got?
Jeff, let's go to Harold in Memphis.
Hey, Harold.
Let's go to Harold in Memphis.
Harold in Memphis. There. Are you there, sir?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
I'm a huge Grizzlies fan, huge Memphis Tigers fan, born and raised here, and I think the sky's been falling for some time. We talk about Josh sitting back in the stands with the ski mask on. We talk about the trade and how what we didn't get and what we gave away and how it affected our cap space and what we're going to do in the future and was it a now pick or was it a future pick. We've been talking about rotations. We've been talking about blending players and players not stepping up and how he's using people and how he's – and we're talking about the coach, how he's substituting. And we've been talking about this for months. Even when they were the number two seed, we have been talking about for a city, the sky was falling without even using that term. Thank you.
Thanks very much. All right, we're going to take a break. I got to step away for a minute. Jeffrey's going to talk to Chris Harrington. We'll continue this conversation with Chris. Then I'll be back. It is the Jeff Cockett Show on a Monday, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Chris Harrington joins us now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's a Personality Crisis by the New York Dolls from their 1973 eponymously titled debut album. Truly one of my all-time favorite albums. A wild, one-of-a-kind band, short-lived, but then got back together later. David Johansen, lead singer, songwriter, and last living member of the New York Dolls, died over the weekend.
Are the Grizzlies having a personality crisis?
It could be. I should have done that segue myself. You saved me on that one. That could be.
I only ask because, on the one hand, you know, we're into the month of March. This, I feel like you used to always see this in baseball. When you'd see the team in August, even good teams would just kind of be like, kind of sick of each other. Everybody's ready to get to the playoffs and moving on. And so there are some contextual things that can explain what is happening. But when you see it, do you think that there's a bigger picture issue with what we're seeing from the Grizzlies.
Well, yeah, but it may not necessarily be what the thing that people are expecting or thinking about there. They've played a lot of really close games lately, an unusual number of really close games, which has not been the Grizzlies this season. They've tended to either like win big or every once in a while lose big when they play a good team. And lately, it's just been close games, right? And so when you play close games, like it gets real dicey which way it's going to go. And the mood tends to be entirely contingent on whether a shot falls in or doesn't fall in. And so they win a close game against Orlando and Phoenix, and everybody feels great about it. And they lose close games to the Knicks and Spurs, and everyone feels terrible about it. But, like, what happens if the De'Aaron Fox and OG Anunoby shots miss, and suddenly everyone feels great about the Grizzlies? Like, the problems that got them to the close game are still there in both circumstances. And, you know, when I was last week on the show, Jeff asked me about the podcast Drew and I did talking about the Phoenix game, exciting overtime win. You weren't so excited about that, you know. And to me, it's the same kind of thing. I think they've been playing with their food too much lately. And they've been playing with their food, and it's put them in some tight games down the stretch that maybe didn't need to be tight games down the stretch. And some of those you win, some of those you lose, right? Like, Ja could have missed that shot that forced overtime against the Suns, and they lose that game. OG Anunoby could have missed the three, and then they win that game. And so it's a little bit coin flippy on the end of these games. But I do think the team has been playing with its food a little bit too much. They have not been treating these games as a playoff dress rehearsal. You know, you'll look up and, like, I think in the New York game and the Phoenix game, which they split, but both of those games, you look up in the second quarter and, like, Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jared Jackson are all available and all three of them are on the bench at the same time, right?
Yep.
Or you look at the San Antonio game, you're missing four of your maybe top seven or eight guys, and you're still playing an 11-man rotation in the first half, and you got Cam Spencer, who's not even on your main roster, so two ways out there, right? And you just get run off for 5 minutes, and that basically loses you the game. So I think they have been not treating the games as playoff-level games in terms of how they approach them, in terms of some of the decision-making on lineups and stuff. And I think that filters, I don't know whether it's related, but I think there have been stretches where the team is just not as focused on defense as it needs to be either. And so I think, you know, the approach from a lineup player use standpoint and the team's defensive focus, both of those two things are not at the level you want it to be when you're playing very serious basketball.
I don't have Drew's column in front of me, but to me, this kind of echoes exactly what Santi said. And I think Drew even asked, hey, Santi basically said, you know, we're not taking it seriously. We get to the fourth quarter, we think we're going to kind of flip a switch and we're going to win the game. And even Jeremy's like, I agree with everything that he said. And to me, that kind of shows that there's probably some frustration from even the Jerrans of the team. But I feel like it feels to me, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong, most of the frustration stems from defense. Like, I even think about Luke Kennard chunking the ball at the end of the quarter, getting a tech. Like, it felt like everything is just, they don't feel like they are. There's a belief among some on the team that they're not taking defense seriously.
The defense has really slipped. If you look at the season long stats, you'll still see the Grizzlies, like, as of yesterday at least, they were like ninth, right? But that ninth has been steadily tricking down. And over the past 10 games, I think is what I looked at yesterday, over the past 10 games, it's like 25th. And there's a real question there of, like, how good they can be with the roster they have right now. Like, you know, going into the season, the idea of the Grizzlies as a really good defense was sort of built on the idea of Marcus Smart and Vince Williams as the top two guys. And the Marcus Smart thing didn't work out, and Vince is still working his way into shape. You know, he's on a minutes restriction. They're not playing him on back-to-backs. Even when he's playing, he's still working his way into, like, conditioning. And so you don't really have the real version of him yet. You hope you get it. Jalen Wells has been good, but then you look around and, like, there's lots of other shaky defenders out there. And so they may not have the personnel to be elite right now defensively, but they should not be, like, 25th in the league in the last 10 games. And my question is, how much does the playoff rotation fix that? I wrote a little bit about that today. Like, you know, if you think about who's playing now versus who's playing in the playoffs, like, you subtract, you know, G.G. Jackson minutes and Jay Huff minutes and Cam Spencer and some of this stuff, and you sort of narrow it down, and Jaren's playing more, all of that stuff is going to improve. but it doesn't improve enough. They have to the players who are still going to be playing need to start playing better on the defensive end, and there needs to be better team focus on that. And that's what Taylor Jenkins, after the game against the Spurs, he was asked, like, you know, what does the team need to do to sort of finish better down the stretch here? And he just said defense, point blank. It's all about that. And so I think that's a real test for the team to, like, really crank it up defensively.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the other question I have, because I'm with you that there are some obviously going to be personnel questions. But one thing that kind of stands out when I've been watching them throughout the season is this team capable of being physical enough to be a good defense?
This is something that this is, I mean, it's sort of like when we go into the, at this point, the team is what it is, right?
Yes, exactly. I totally agree with you on that. Yeah.
At the end of the playoffs, at the end of every season, whenever your season ends, and your season will always end at some point, the teams evaluate themselves. They evaluate their roster. They evaluate their coaching staff. They evaluate their approach. They evaluate the whole thing, and they make changes. Sometimes the changes are small. Sometimes the changes are big. To me, I feel comfortable already that part of my evaluation will be toughness. The team has gotten rid of the team has too much of a toughness deficit. The roster has drifted in a way that lacks that. The thing that really underscored that was when Lamar Stevens got into the game on Saturday night. And it reminded me a lot of when the Grizzlies last season, amid their lost season, signed this guy off the free agent scrap heap named Jalen Noel.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, Jalen Noel, this guy's great. We got to keep this guy. And it wasn't that they needed Jalen Noel, who's a journeyman. It's that his presence underscored how badly they needed that skill set, which is the guy who could actually create a bucket. Like a guy who could actually, you know, have the ball and create a shot with it, which with John Morant out, they didn't have enough of last season. I think when Lamar Stevens stepped on the floor, it was the same thing. It's not so much that they needed Lamar Stevens, is that he showed they needed a guy like that. That real strong physical bump and grind toughness on the perimeter, to me, his presence showed how much this roster, you know, Marcus Smart was supposed to be that guy, and he just wasn't. But I think the team needs to add toughness. You know, they try to get tougher with what they have the rest of the way. There's no other choice. But going into the summer, that's something I would really look at.
And I swear to God, I'm not trying to relitigate a decision, because I wondered about it in real time, because the Marcus Smart deal went live basically as I was going to the air. And so we're trying to figure out, like, okay, what is the deal in real time? But the key question that I just always had was, is this necessary right now? Because it seemed to me like, hey, you're telling me that the Grizzlies couldn't have made a deal in which they said, here's a first-round pick, take Marcus Smart. I just firmly believe that deal would have been available in the summer. They have their reasons for doing it, but, like, I do wonder, is there a value that Marcus Smart could have had still, despite the fact that he hadn't played a ton and all the questions that you could have had? I just wondered if there was going to be a value for him later on during the season.
Well, here's a little thing about my process as someone who covers the team, and I find that sometimes readers and listeners sort of get this confused.
Sure.
So I want to clarify. To me, the first thing is to understand what's happening. So that whenever anything happens, my first instinct is to try to understand it. And then my second thing, once I understand it, is to explain it. Now, my own judgment comes as the third thing. And so understanding and explaining what a team is doing and why it is doing it is not necessarily an endorsement of that. But
for sure.
I think.
But here's the thought process, and here's how it was executed. Right. I totally agree with you on that.
So with the Marcus Smart thing, I was only quoted to this effect in the column I wrote or anything else, but I feel comfortable putting all the pieces together. They decided that he wasn't going to help them, that they didn't want him in their playoff rotation. That you only play so many guys, and they would rather be playing Jalen Wells and Vince Williams and Marcus Smart, that they would help them more. And if you've decided he's not helping us in the playoffs, then why do you want that $21 million on your books next summer? And so I think that was the decision-making. Do I think that's correct? I don't know, because Marcus Smart never played. I just didn't have a standard for judgment. He has been playing with the Wizards since they traded him. But, like, he's playing, like, you know, 10, 15 minutes off the bench. You know, the production's kind of meh. And that's the worst team in basketball. So, I don't know whether they were right about that. I don't know whether Marcus Smart would have helped them in the playoffs or not. They decided he was not going to. I do not know whether that was the correct decision.
Yeah, and I guess the way that I viewed it was, hey, it's already a sunk cost. Like, what was another 3 months? But I'm with you. All right, I want to get to actual Friday because I watched the presser and I know that you were there. Let's start with, I think, the two plays that seems to have most people scratching their head. Did we ever get a solid answer for why Taylor Jenkins did not call timeout after the rebound? I think it was like 30 seconds, some, you know, give or take 30 seconds. Ja has the ball. I think everybody thinks Ja got fouled, and it seemed like that caused somewhat of a panic because they didn't call the foul. But then when Ja loses the basketball and he's going the wrong direction, there's still no move to call timeout. Do we get an explanation for that?
Are we talking about the eight-second violation? What
yes.
are we talking about?
Yes, to stop yeah. the eight-second violation.
Right. No, I don't know if we – apparently the clock may have started a little bit earlier than it should have. On that, there's some thought about that maybe they were robbed of a second or so because it sort of the clock switched when Jaron touched the ball, not when he had possession of the ball.
Okay.
I don't know the answer to that. I saw some stuff about maybe on the local broadcast they were saying he was trying to call a timeout and the refs didn't hear him or whatever, but I don't know about that. It happened very quickly, obviously. It was a very odd play.
It looked like to me, if I could parse the two that you said together, that would make sense. Jenkins was trying to call timeout. I don't think that it wasn't heard. It was that you looked up and it was like, it was clearly already past the 8 seconds.
Right.
Like it wasn't even close to where, and so they made the call. And then I think the other aspect of it was the defensive decision and on the OG Anunoby 3. Having watched Taylor's answer, I interpreted it as follows. You tell me if I'm on the right track. He made the gamble that he thought the Knicks, in that situation, they were going to go mid-range, try to get the ball up on the rim. If he missed, they would have the opportunity for a putback. But essentially, he gambled that they were going to go for the two. Brunson makes a decision, makes a great pass. They get the three, and he's kicking himself over the decision to have Vince help. Because it felt like, to me, the first issue was Vince helping. And then when Jaron eventually ends up helping, it's Santi one on three, and he's got to make a decision who he's going to defend. Is that the interpretation that you got as well?
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing like shot goes in, shot doesn't go in. You feel totally different about it, but the strategy is no different, right? There's a little bit of that to it. The Grizzlies, this is something that fans have been get ornery about with the Grizzlies for years, the whole time in Taylor Jenkins' era, is that their instinct or their strategy tends to be to protect the rim at the expense of the three sometimes. And sometimes you get burned on that, and you don't like it when you get burned on that. But over the course of seasons, like they've always had good defenses, you know? And so the strategy over the course of 82 games has tended to bear out in a positive way. But that is what they do. I mean, they do, a lot of people would say overhelp, and that is my instinct as well, that to overhelp a little bit, and I get frustrated by it too. That is pretty normal for Grizzlies basketball to react that way.
Is there any big picture to take away from Saturday? Because to your point about some of the people that were out there, even my wife, when she saw Cam Spencer, she's like, who is that? I was like, well, that's Cam Spencer. You watched him a lot in a UConn jersey, but that you had a little different feeling. I mean, to me, it almost feels like there are just quarters where they break down entirely defensively, and then they're just playing from behind. Like, to me, it was a frustrating game because if you're someone that is sitting there going, like, why am I going to this game just to watch half the roster, like, I understand frustration, but man, I didn't really know what to think of it other than Jaron continues to be a stalwart, and that feels like one that you're just going to kind of be like, ugh, gross.
It was gross is a good word to put it, because to ruin Jaron Jackson Jr. on that night did not deserve that outcome.
I agree.
That was one of the best halves of basketball I've ever seen a Grizzlies player play in the second half. He had 32 points in the second half. He didn't have just two blocks. He had two monster blocks, two steals, and then that three he hit is one. Like, I'm going to put that on my best moments of the season list, even though I lost the game, because that was one of the best shots in terms of just pure force of will making a big shot. That's one of the better shots I've seen.
Like the classic, you have to have it. Like, because I care about guys making plays when it's crunch time and it matters. Like, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and so it was just – I'll go back to, the plane with the food analogy I used earlier. It was just – there's been a lot of too casual in the rotations, too casual in the defense, just a lot of casual. I thought there was too casual in the first half of that Phoenix game. They pulled out and won. And I am sort of ready for them to see. And I know you can't, like, you're not going to play your stars 38 minutes a game and, like, go all out every single game for the next 25 games because you are trying to get a healthy team to the playoffs. But I would like to see a little bit more dress rehearsal look for playoff basketball. And so in the first half of that game, to me, it was just like, you know, the joke would be it's like, you know, the kids' league where everybody gets to play kind of thing.
Yep.
Like I didn't – to have four guys out and play an 11-man rotation felt like, you know, a November basketball. Not gearing up for the playoffs basketball.
And then I guess we'll finish with that because I know Taylor was asked about it on Saturday, but how much consideration should there be for paying attention to the standings and how that affects your lineups versus, hey, we're trying to get to the playoffs as healthy as possible?
You know, it's a good question, and this is sort of the main thing I wrote about in a column that's up today in the Daily Memphian. It's this sort of two-track thing in the regular season. One track is you're trying to win enough to both make the playoffs and position yourself in the playoffs. The other track is you're trying to get to get your team to that point in position to win when you get there, which is both about having a healthy roster and a roster that, like, knows what it's doing, right?
Yep.
And so there's going to be a difference between those two things, right? If you're not playing your normal – if you're not playing as many guys, that's going to help them. If you're not playing guys as many minutes or whatever, or you're more conservative about player use, that might help your health. But are you building, you know, the chemistry you need to, like, be firing on all cylinders or whatever when you get there? But there is this tension between, you know, winning enough during the season and having the healthy roster when you get there. And I think the Grizzlies are trying – all season have been trying to navigate those two things in a way that satisfies the first but doesn't compromise the second. I don't even think that's necessarily wrong. I think reasonable people can disagree about that. But that I do think that is a sort of essentially what they're doing. And so one question you would have would be, is there going to be somewhere between second and fifth at this point? There's too much of a gap above second and below fifth.
Totally agree.
And so what's preferable? To be the 2 seed with a banged-up roster or the 5th seed with a healthy roster, right? Like, you hope your answer is the 2 seed with a healthy roster, which is still very possible, and that's what you're trying to do. But if you had to choose between those two, I think that's a real choice. There's not a clear answer with that choice.
Chris, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. We come back. Jeff's going to rejoin the program. He'll come back next right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. All right, Jeffrey, we're going to get to the combine in a moment. A couple of the things I wanted to hit real quick. One is I mentioned that I had a conversation with Richard Shadyac. Rick Shadyac, who is headed out as the CEO of ALSEC. And among the things that I asked him about, you can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian, ran yesterday, and then I did a little Q&A with him. And in the Q&A, I asked him about the golf tournament. Feels good about the future of the golf tournament. The marathon. Feels good about the future of the marathon. But then I asked him about Hoops for St. Jude.
Yep.
And he said, I like to do it, but what he said was things are really, really hard in the NIL space.
Yep.
Basically, if you want teams to come in and play here, you've got to shovel money into the pockets of their players, right?
Yep.
And he said, we're still negotiating, but the contrast between his enthusiasm for and optimism about the golf tournament and the marathon – and his approach to the way he talked about the Hoops for St. Jude event, I'll be surprised if there's another one of them.
Yeah, I just think a lot we're going to see with those type of events. Like, there's a reason why a lot of them are happening in Vegas. It's just because the payout.
Well, and if in the end the point there is also to raise money for St. Jude,
yep.
Money and awareness for St. Jude, if you've got to be making it worthwhile for the players on both teams. And then you've got to be figuring out, is there going to be any, like, where is the benefit this for St. It is, in the end, a fundraiser for St. Jude. It's kind of amazing. When Richard Shadyac took over there as president and CEO, we like to think of St. Jude as it's always been this fundraising colossus and this the most trusted brand in the world. And while it has always been, of course, a charity, an enterprise, a hospital that is well thought of, the way it has been they went from raising, when he got there in 2009, between $600 and $700 million a year, to now $2.75 billion. So the number that they used to raise is now on the right side of the decimal point of the number that they raise, and they have to keep raising that money, among other things. The truth of the matter is one of the real advantages that St. Jude has. Like, why, if you're at the Mass General in Boston or you're in New York or you're in the Bay Area, why do you move to Memphis? Well, the mission at St. Jude's great, right? But whatever. Like, you move here because you don't have to be raising money all the time for your lab. One of my son's good friends' fathers is a scientist at St. Jude. And he came from Penn, and that's exactly why he came. He said, Penn, half the time I spent raising money.
I just show up and work now.
Now I can show up and work because they make it, because they have. And so they've got this big expansion going on over there. Two new 15-story towers they're building, whatever else. They're going to have to fill those with people. They're going to have to keep raising immense amounts of money. And with all due respect, throwing money at basketball players isn't the highest priority and shouldn't be, right?
Totally
agree. In the end. So I'm not real optimistic about Hoops for St. Jude continuing. The marathon, obviously, is still their biggest fundraiser, and he's pretty confident about, seemed confident about the golf tournament as well. All that hinges on FedEx's continued interest in being as involved as they are. We haven't touched on the Alabama-Tennessee game. Was that more Tennessee winning or Alabama losing? It was astounding.
A little column B.
The NATO screw-ups were just...
The no timeout, the subbing in...
The subbing out your rebounders before the foul shot. But to me, the most egregious was not calling the timeout to get the ball in. You know, and...
Yet, guys still had to make a 35-footer.
Guys still had to make, but a relatively uncontested 35-footer.
Still 35-footer.
Yes. Anyway, thrilling. That was certainly thrilling. All right. In terms of the combine, Jeffrey, I do think that we've been reflecting on why wasn't there as much buzz, right, at the combine this year. I think some of it is that the quarterback class last year was so extraordinary that anything looks a little different in comparison, right? Most quarterbacks classes don't look like last year's quarterback class. And so I think that's part of it. In the end, the combine really became just a place where people talked about Matt Stafford, who you always knew were going back to the Rams anyway. Like, that's anticlimactic, right?
I think the other thing that kind of hurts college football is a lot of player, like, we don't have the familiarity, I think, with players that we once did. So I think that doesn't help.
Well, they stick around still. They can't go until 3 years. This isn't like...
Yeah, but they're moving with a higher frequency.
I guess. In terms of locals, the bad news about Seth Hennigan is he has small hands.
Yeah.
The good news is he's an athlete,
he can
man.
Move.
He is an athlete. Seth Hennigan... I would say, despite the small hands, 9 inches, Seth Hennigan.
Joe Burrow has 9-inch hands as well.
Yep.
Should point out.
Seth Hennigan helped himself. First, he ran a 4.78 40. Then he ran 4.77 40, and he threw up the M.
Yep.
And his Brady Cook was the most athletic quarterback who tested there, and which is to be expected. But Seth, on the RAS score, which is a basic athletic score,
right?
He got a 7.11. Obviously, he ran the 40 in 4.77. But his broader score was 7.11, which means nothing to anyone except for if you look at the 993 quarterbacks who were at the combine between 87 and 25. There were 993 of them. His score was 288th. So he's in basically the top quarter of athletes.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn good.
Especially if you're trying, you know, if you're in kind of that marginal area, like, hey, this guy's a better athlete than we think, that's certainly only going to help him.
Sneaky athletic?
There you go. Sneaky athletic.
Is that what you think he is? Sneaky athletic? And he threw well, too. He threw well. I think he helped himself. I think he might well be a sixth or seventh round draft pick.
Yeah, I think we're now at the point where I would almost expect he's going to get drafted.
Yeah, Rock Taylor broke 4.5.
Yeah, but I mean, we knew he wasn't like a blazer.
No, we knew he wasn't a blazer, and just didn't want him to be slow.
Correct.
Like, he is a go-get-the-football, high-point guy, whatever else. Although, weirdly, his vertical, Seth's was better.
Yeah.
Seth's vertical, better than Rock Taylor's. But yeah, I think Rock Taylor didn't hurt himself either. He broke 4.5, and so that was great. In terms of the other quarterbacks, there, the most astounding thing, Jeffrey, and you explained to me how this happened.
All right,
you're the hands expert.
Yeah,
Jalen Milroe at the Senior Bowl, his hand was 8 3/4 inches. At the combine, his hand was 9 3/8 inches.
So
what the hell? The man is his hand stretching machine.
I can't remember if it was Brandon. I think it was Brandon Allen. One of the Arkansas Allens once showed up at the Senior Bowl and it was like 9 inches. And then he was able to, like, he talked about, like, he did hand exercises, whatnot. He like got like a maybe a quarter of an inch.
I've read about this in men's magazines. You can add inches, but I've never really believed
it. Exactly. And this is almost like, did he, like, did
what
he
the get, hell?
Do we get some, like, you know, supplements? Like, what are we doing here?
To 9 3/8. So Jalen Milroe did not stand out. Jackson Dart did not stand out. Did you watch any of the throwing?
So I watched a little of the throwing. The thing is, like, the standing out was just, like, Will Howard couldn't throw the football. Like, that was what stood out to me.
Will Howard threw out his, like, he stood out as not being able to throw the football.
Correct.
You know, one guy who can throw the football is Kyle McCord.
Yes.
From Syracuse, former Ohio State quarterback. He's not mobile. He's not going to be beating Seth Hennigan in the 40.
But or the vertical.
He can throw the football.
He can spin it. He was also a highly rated prospect. Moose Johnston, when he came in, he thinks that he'll go up boards because he can. Like, his baseline throwing is at a baseline that is, there's just not many guys that can throw it like he does.
Other notables from the combine. Isaiah Bonds is the guy who said the Texas wide receiver.
I just don't even understand why you dropped that nugget.
He said he's going to set the new record, beat Xavier Worthy's record. Xavier Worthy ran a 4.2, and Isaiah Bonds 4.39. Right. Yeah, listen, here's the thing. 4.39 would be a great speed if you hadn't said you were going to be better than Xavier Worthy.
By the way, it's a great
time. Keep the expectations low.
There's a big difference, though, between – that's 0.2 seconds, basically.
Yes, there's a big difference. But don't you think he had done it, or do you think he was –
I think he was trying to psych himself up.
Some other local folks, Quinshon Judkins was
– he had a good day.
He had a really good day. 6 feet, 221 pounds, and he ran 4.48. Yep. So here's the thing. There's a million really good running backs in this draft. So even though a lot of people think – there could be two that could go in the first round. You could also talk yourself into, I don't need to take one of the two first-round guys because there's a bunch of other guys. Dylan Sampson is another one. He didn't run the 40, but in other testing, he did well. Like, I like him. I think he's going to be good. Trey Amos, the cornerback from Ole Miss, did really well, 4.44. Anything else stand out to you?
I thought Omarion Hampton had a very good combine. I know he's in the other running back. He's in the category, though, of first-rounders. I did like, is it Will Campbell, his answer when his
short
his
arms,
short
man.
Arm,
short arms!
His short arms.
Will Campbell's got short arms. He's going to be a bear. That's my prediction.
I did like his answer when he had the short arms. He's like, go back and watch every sack I've ever given up. It's not because of short arms. And then basically he's like inviting people to go watch the tape. There are just not many sacks he gives up.
Right. All right, so there you go. We did have transactions as well. A Debo Samuel, now a Commander.
Did a fifth feel
light?
Yeah,
but the money, it's cheap. The money. Actually, I think there's this feeling that he may be kind of cooked, and he's not cheap.
No,
and if you trade for him, he's not cheap.
I mean, I think it's also obvious he's been available for long enough to where that was probably the best offer you can get. I don't know. It just, to me, that felt a little light, but I assume that was honestly the best deal they got.
Right. They didn't turn down a better deal. Stafford back to the Rams, which makes you wonder how the rest of this is going to play out. Kirk Cousins, most people think, you know, the Falcons would like to trade him, but they've got a roster bonus that they owe him.
I think it's June 1st, I believe.
I think it's sooner than that. And it's $10 million, and so he is likely going to be cut and could end up any number of places.
Basically the same situation that happened to Russ, right?
Right.
He'll get cut once that date happens, and then the Falcons still have to pay him the money, and so then he signs for like a vet minimum. I think that's what most people are expecting.
So he's going to end up somewhere. Darnold, it doesn't feel like the Vikings are going to tag him. Current view. And so he could end up on the Giants. He could end up on the Raiders. He could end up on the Titans. He could even end up with the Steelers. Although it feels like the Steelers, Justin Fields is emerging. They're only going to pick one of their two.
Right.
And obviously Calvin Austin was on with Jason John. He did not tip his hand.
I would imagine even Calvin doesn't know.
Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't know. I bet he would like Russ because he had success with Russ. Russ throws a deep, good deep ball. Like, I would imagine But then they're going to pick one of the two. And so one of those guys is going to move on. If Darnold moves on, it feels like Daniel Jones might well re-sign in Minnesota.
I think that was that has been the suspicion, because also when Daniel they added Daniel to the playoff roster, and that was to kind of symbolize, all right, if we this would be our veteran option if we're worried about JJ's health.
Yeah, and so there, and that makes perfect sense.
And if you're DJ,
they obviously
that,
really like JJ, or they wouldn't be moving on from Darnold. So they want the next era,
correct?
So you do that, and then you have Daniel Jones as a perfectly good backup, right?
Exactly the same situation you were in last year.
Exactly the same situation you were in last year. So I don't hate that at all. Your Giants are said to be in the running for Cousins, for possibility Russ, for Aaron Rodgers. What do you think about the Aaron Rodgers experiment? Continuing, Aaron Rodgers back in New York, back in the same stadium.
Yeah, so he doesn't have to move. He's got to switch locker rooms. The thing that I don't like is the thought process of still drafting a quarterback and then having him play behind Rodgers. Like, to me, if you've decided you're taking the quarterback, just take the quarterback.
Is
trying to do the juggling of,
you don't want Cam Ward and Aaron Rodgers. Worked out in Green Bay. Kinda.
Yeah, but like, the example that they're trying to use is, well, once upon a time when we drafted Eli, we had Kurt Warner as well. It's like, well, that worked out. It's like, it didn't work out then. It worked out because Eli turned out to be great.
Here's the other question. Is Aaron Rodgers, so, if you look at the raw numbers last year, he wasn't bad.
He's not bad.
If you look at the analytics, he was bad. EPA, whatever, yep. He was bad. He did say he was healthy. But then the problem really was, it was the needing the offense that he needed. Like,
yep.
he dictated an archaic offense, and he dictated the players who were on the offense. He fed the ball to certain players and not other players. He went on McAfee every week and said wacky-ass stuff. And he was in, he obviously famously skipped, you know, mandatory camp,
yep,
and went to Egypt. Like, if you get him back, can you get him back without a bunch of that stuff, or is the Aaron Rodgers experience always going to be the Aaron Rodgers experience?
I think at this point it's just going to be the Aaron Rodgers experience.
I got no interest in it.
You still hear about, like, well, he wants to bring Davante Adams with him. It's like, okay, well, how are you making that work? Like, to me, the appeal of Aaron Rodgers is if you can get a cheap quarterback that is still highly productive.
I want him throwing to Malik Neighbors, thanks very much, if he's there.
But then, like, I wonder, like, is that great for Malik Neighbors? It hasn't worked out well with Wilson.
No, it hasn't. But that's what I'm saying. I don't want Davante Adams,
yeah,
coming over and taking
no
targets from Malik. From yeah.
And also, it's like, as bad as the Jets' offensive line is, I know one that's worse. That'd be the Giants.
It can be decent if they're healthy.
Okay. I'm not holding my breath.
Anyway, that's still a couple months away. The draft is still a couple months away. The quarterback stuff will be interesting to see how it sorts out between now and then. And then we did have the news about Pete Rose.
Yep.
Do you think Pete Rose, and again, Hall of Fame discussions for me, kind of like uniform discussions for me, not things that I'm really, it's not my thing, right? It's
sure
not my thing. We can debate all the stuff, whatever. I don't think people are going to necessarily vote Pete Rose in, even if he becomes eligible. Like, that's the other thing. You have to get voted in.
That seems likely.
It's the same thing with Bonds and the same thing with Clemens and whatever else. Like, in the end, you need the voters to vote them in, even if they're eligible. But if Pete Rose went into the hall posthumously, how would you feel about that?
I think I'd be okay with it. My biggest gripe with the Hall of Fames is, they're museums. I have no problem putting Pete Rose in. Tell the whole story.
Right, they're not just museums, though. To be inducted into the... When you are inducted into the Hall of Fame, it's as an honor, not as a... Just as a, this happened. In other words, if it were just as a this happened, you might have disgraceful athletes put in there. It is an honor to put them in. But there is this museum aspect, too. I think the truth of the matter is, who did they put in recently posthumously? And I felt bad about it. I'm like, come on, man. You couldn't have done that when they were alive. With Pete Rose, it's the—
To me, it was Mongo. Mongo's not dead for the Bears, but he has ALS, I think.
That wasn't the one that I was— I think the sad thing is Pete Rose dead can go into the Hall of Fame. Because if he were alive to go into the Hall of Fame, he'd make a mockery of it.
Yeah. No,
he'd be there hawking, like, he'd be hawking his autographs. He'd be whatever. He'd be double birding everybody. Like, he is, while he was alive, he had no contrition. He had no sense of, you know, that he had done anything wrong. And he would show up. He was selling, you know, he was selling baseballs, cards and signatures that said, I bet on baseball, right? Pete Rose. He made a mockery of everything. If he's dead, can't make a mockery of it anymore. And he can go in, and he should be. And he is the hits leader. He should be actually honored because, honestly, even like, I think Bonds and Clemens should be in too. But at least the things that they are accused of, or we believe they did impact their performance, right? Like,
I think the longevity.
I don't believe that Bonds only was great because of steroids,
right.
And I don't believe that Clemens was only great because of steroids. But steroids did help them get the numbers that make them Hall of Fame worthy. It did help them, certainly at the end or whatever, somewhere along the line. Their numbers.
I'm a little iffier on Bonds. I totally agree with you.
Their numbers were slightly juiced by juice,
yes.
Right? Pete Rose, his greatness was his greatness. It is something completely unrelated that makes him ineligible for the Hall of Fame. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame, and I hate to say it. Most people, I think, boy, I want them to be alive for the moment. With Pete Rose, I think it's best that he's dead when he goes in the Hall of Fame.
I agree, because I believe the story is Joe Morgan once tried to broker, hey, let's get Pete in. And
yeah.
Joe goes to work with the MLB office and, like, here's what the things that he has to do.
And, like, the next day.
Yeah, it was after Joe got done meeting with him. And then Joe's like, I can't do anything for you. Like, I tried.
All right. I got to take a break back in a moment. Oh, wait. Before that, let me tell you that if you were selling your house, Josh Hysaw would be the person to call. And I do mean that. Here's the thing. You get these calls offering you instant cash offers for your home. We all get them all the time, right? Every single homeowner has gotten one of these unsolicited cash offers for their homes. We talked to Josh Hysaw about it. Josh, of course, is team at Keller Williams Realty, and he will tell you what you really know, which is a lot of those unsolicited offers are for way less money than the home is actually worth. You know, Josh understands that. Cash offers convenient, makes the whole process easy, but you want full value. And that's what Josh will do. Josh will give you your home's full value and make it just as easy for you. Doesn't want you to be leaving any cash on the table in the process. So if you are selling your home, Josh Hysaw, yet another reason to call Josh Hysaw. Phone number is 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147, or the website joshhasthebuyers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. News came out over the weekend that Hugh Freeze was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Wishing him the best for his recovery and continued good health after his diagnosis with prostate cancer. And then, Jeffrey, on the Oscars yesterday, which we talked about briefly, and you'd mentioned this off the air, one of the weird things about it was no one's seen any of these movies, it felt like.
Yes.
You know?
To me, it's like, I don't even care, like, the art nature, the messing, whatnot. I just felt like most of these movies didn't even have, like, wide releases.
Well, it's what you were saying about the Combine was like, well, we don't know these guys as much. Like, that's what it actually was about the film. So the Best Picture, Anora, which I have not seen and you have not seen,
no.
But Chris loved. It had the lowest domestic ticket sales in Best Picture history. So fewer people have seen it than any other Best Picture ever, except for the pandemic. The previous leader in that category, no one had seen it. was the Hurt Locker in 2010. It was 17 million domestic ticket sales, inflation adjusted, 26 million in domestic ticket sales, compared to, again, for Nora, 15.7 million. So I thought the show was perfectly entertaining and whatnot. But you're right. This was a year where it didn't feel like most of these films were films that anyone had seen.
Correct.
The Brutalist. Who's seen? No one's seen The Brutalist, right? No one's seen Anora. No, like most of these. Chris has seen them all. We're glad to have him on and his wisdom here. But anyway, congrats, of course, to the winners. Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. This means it is Monday, so they will have Respect Burgers at 1 p.m., and Jeff will join them at 1:25. Jason Munn's going to join us on Jeffrey Wright & Company. Coach Hurd will be with me today. Munn's will talk Tigers with us during hour number one. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
A shout-out to the Memphis Tigers for winning yesterday's game. Andy Kennedy tweeted, "You got to beat the man to be the man. Salute to Memphis basketball for being the better team." There you go. Memphis plays again. Obviously, they can wrap it up this weekend. They play again tomorrow night. We got to take a break. We got to get out of here, I mean. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. For now, our work is done.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacead. Almacead is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacead. Find out more and see the university studies at almacead.com. That's almased.com.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.